Yes, we did it.
Perfect dismount. We did it. We're back, baby.
Oh, producer Andrew, you might be surprised to learn, very incompetent.
No, you're doing great. It only took 7 minutes to finally get to work,
but
we did
bullshit.
It. We did it, baby.
Yes, we're kept picking up an episode of Yo, Is This Racist? Because we're just baking shit left and right. Once again, we are in a situation where Tawny can't be here, and I'm not, as usual, I don't know exactly where she is, I will say. She appears to be doing... I feel like I can't say, just in case we're not supposed to say what she's doing.
You don't want to out her as a working actress?
Or whatever the hell it is that's been in the group chat, I gotta be honest. Okay, anyway, yeah. Tawny's doing a thing. I don't know where it is. I don't know when it is. I just know that Kevin has to... I also don't know if we've talked about Kevin's life in the main feed. So Kevin, Kevin's got a thing coming up. Tawny's got a thing right now. Ex-producer and recently repatriated man back from Canada, Cody Ziegler is here. What's up, Zig?
That's right, baby. I'm back. I will say, I think I texted you in our group chat that while I was in Canada, someone came up to me during one of my panels and said, "Are you producer Zig?" And I said, "I am." And then they told me to tell you and Tawny that they were big fans of Yo, Is This Racist?
Oh, so that's so wild.
It's me passing along the information to you.
Thank you. Thanks to whoever that was.
Yeah, very nice Canadian. I mean, they were all, as Canada, so they're all nice. So, but that was a particularly nice Canadian person.
How was Canada? Welcome back.
It was cool. It was very nice. It was no hosers anywhere. I didn't take off anything. What's the last one? No, it was nice. I'm an enormous stan of Montreal. But this was not Montreal. It was Toronto, or Toronto, as the locals say. It was fun. I saw also fellow producer, not for this show, but of previously rival networks, Mars Mel. she took me out to a lovely chef's table, chef's course meal at. I don't know why I'm plugging this place, because I have no stakes in it, but. Called Richmond Station. That was really dope. It was really, really good. We had some venison. I know you would have enjoyed that.
Damn.
The con was great. I was there for Toronto Comic Con. Lovely. Bunch of lovely people. Just the right size for me. Not too overwhelming like New York Comic Con or LA Comic Con. It was like right in the middle. It was fun. The only downside is that I can tell I'm getting older, because that three hour time difference fucking ruined me, dude. Like, I was waking up at like 5 a.m. our time every day, and it was just like killing me, man. Like, it was rough, but it was solid. I wish I had more time to like actually take in the city. Like, I basically only had one night. I mean, I went out once with Mars. She took me out to dinner and like walked around like a little bit, and then the next night I got French tacos with my friend Annika.
This is wild that you texted me this, and I was like, what the fuck are you talking about, French tacos?
So it is not a taco at all. If anything, it's more of a
torta. I'm gonna look this up while you're talking.
The only equivalent that I can think of is like a Fat Sal sandwich, but instead of putting it on bread, they put it in a wrap. It's just a bunch of meat.
It's like a thing.
It's almost like I guess what we could take is like a California burrito. So like your protein, your rice and fries, and then a bunch of sauce. But instead of a burrito, it's I don't know. It's not a taco, but they will tell you it's not a taco. But it is a bunch of meats and vegetables and sauces in a giant tortilla.
And a proper tortilla though. Yeah.
And a proper tortilla. If anything, I would say I would pitch the name of a French burrito.
Yeah.
I think taco is. And just size wise, you're getting more than tacos worth, quantity worth of foodstuffs. But so that was fun. I wish I had more time to actually enjoy the city, like walk around the city. But it was nice. It was the hotel, restaurant, and bar was fucking Yoga Flames. Like, it was so fucking good. Like, someone else has traveled on tours and stuff, Andrew. You know that. Sometimes, more often than not, the hotel
restaurant
is not usually hitting, but
yeah,
I will say that they had a fantastic smash burger that was actually a smash burger.
Your little smile on your face right now.
Yeah, I don't eat red meat that much, but like I was in there. I would say, honestly, if I could give an equivalent, I would say it was giving Amboy.
That's a place in LA that is one of my favorite burgers. I just want to say really quick, I'm looking at the Wikipedia for French tacos right now, and the best way to describe it is basically someone told a French person what a taco was, but they got interrupted, and the French person was just like, "Say no more."
Yeah, the French person was like, "Sacre bleu, say no more. I will go, mon ami." Yeah.
Is that just Gambit? Are we just doing Gambit?
Yeah. I transitioned from French to just Gambit. Listeners at home and abroad, Google it. And I will say it is gross. Like, it looks gross, but it does taste good. So that was my time in Toronto. We'll love to come back. Lovely city, a lot of great food. And it was like, I make the equivalent of it is like clean New York and less scary New York.
Yeah.
Which I guess isn't that shocking, you know?
Yeah. I feel like Toronto can get rough if you go to the right
place. Yeah, look, I'm sure it can get rough. So someone who lived in New York for many years, Andrew, I would say that New York is a different type of, like, I don't know. I feel like I'm always on edge when I'm in New York.
Were you about to say a different type of skullduggery? It felt like.
No. I was going to say, it's like New York is like loud, scary. Where, like, people say loud things, but like you're around a bunch of people. So you're like, the odds of something crazy popping off isn't zero, but like, you know, it's not as.
Yeah.
But in, you know, LA is quiet, scary, where it's just like no one's out in the streets ever.
Yeah.
And anything can happen at any moment. So Toronto was neither one of those.
If some shit happens in LA, you're like, just like, yeah, I guess I'm fucked.
Yeah, I guess I'm getting
you got me.
Take my stuff. Yeah,
you got me. I think the difference in Toronto is that sometimes it's like just like the scariest. It's like the way that like people clowned on snow, and then other people were like, well, the thing about Toronto is that is how actual gangsters also act.
Yeah. I will say I did run through such a large Jamaican population in Toronto, and I was so bummed I didn't get to actually try any of the Jamaican food, because I heard it was some of the best around.
It is. You fucked up.
Next time, Toronto. Next time. Tell me where to go.
Just make that part of your rider next time you go to Toronto Comic-Con.
I must have this much oxtail and curry.
I am going to need some oxtail. This is good. We can take a new participant in the oxtail wars onto the Yo Is This Racist. We have mentioned multiple times that the closest our group chat came to blows has been not so much necessarily precisely is oxtail more black or more Asian. I think it was mostly down to phrasing, but that was a dark, not dark, but it was an alarming moment in the group chat where I was like, wait.
Yeah, it was an alarming 45-minute moment.
Are we all actually mad at each other right now?
No, well, for context, like I can't remember how I brought it up, but I think I posted like what I would say is a gross Instagram recipe where it's just like, you know, it's like oxtail stuffed burger lasagna, like just like it's like one, too many hats on
five,
a hat
five but, ingredients too many yeah
yeah and I was like, this is great, and Andrew said, this looks gross, and then I said, I think I may have said, this is anti-black as a joke, and then you associated basically half of the group chat, which is Jessica Gao and Andrew T, associated oxtail with Chinese cuisine, while the other half of the group chat, which is myself and Tawny, were vehemently on the side that this is black. So there was a very cold racial civil war that happened for 45 minutes until we were able to extend across the aisle and amend ourselves.
I was like, wait a minute.
But you know what I think? You know what I think the actual bridge, ironically enough, what I think the bridge between both worlds are, are Japanese or Chinese Jamaicans. So I think that could be.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Chinese Jamaicans is tough, man, because as usual, when it comes to, I'll just say, I don't know, the any black part of the world, Chinese people are not always the best. it's always some sort of colonialism. Like, they're not the worst of the people, yeah. that title still belongs to white colonizers, but they're not part of that.
I can't comment to that, but I will say I would love nothing more than to try a Chinese Jamaican restaurant in actual Jamaica.
I had a dude in a jiu-jitsu class I took that was like, yeah, just a Chinese dude. And then he didn't have like a strong accent or anything. He was actually like also a Canadian citizen. So I think, so he was Chinese, Canadian, Jamaican. He was the trifecta of all these things. But yeah, he was born in fucking Jamaica. And I was like, oh,
that's sick.
That's so weird. That is the best is when, I guess it's because that accent is so distinctive and strong that anytime someone who isn't black has that accent, it does freak you out.
Yeah, I mean, like anytime I see like a white Jamaican, I am like, yeah, I mean, obviously you have to exist, but it does throw me off.
Yeah, it's weird.
Also, I had a very funny like, am I stuck in the Matrix moment where as I was the hotel was attached to where the con was happening, and I was walking through, they had security guards, and the security guards were literally like someone just copy and pasted the same 6'5" 45 to 52-year-old bald headed black Jamaican man. Like they all literally looked like the exact same, besides maybe one had like one extra wrinkle in their forehead. Like it was astonishing how they really just looked for one type when it came to like security at that particular
a real copy paste on the the AI oh, that's I guess that's just how that all works, but you know, it's a little too complex to be like why this is bad and or good and or white people's faults precisely, but just know that that's what I'm working my way there.
Yeah, you'll find the answer.
Shit, speaking of, we were gonna do the question, but there was a question I guess submitted via text message from deep enemy of this show, Jessica Gao, who will never listen to this portion, about a Twitter beef that we saw. And I thought it would be nice to get you in on it because you are, I would say this, at this stage of your career, are you the preeminent black weeb?
I mean, I would never dare call myself the preeminent, but I think I am on the list. I have to be. At least top 25, right?
Profile-wise, yeah. And that's true. Yeah, it is it is a more crowded space than I realized.
I think Meg Thee Stallion is number one. Undisputedly number one is Meg Thee Stallion. But I hope to God I got to be like, I just want to be top 25.
Yeah. I think you're easily top 25.
I will say there's one degree of separation. So I'll say that. Like she was on She-Hulk and I worked on She-Hulk. So that'll be my in is that. After Meg Thee Stallion and 10 other people, there will be me on that list.
All right. Well, as my preeminent black weeb, is that even true?
Yeah.
<That'd be> iffy.
Yeah. I think it's iffy.
We were looking at a Twitter thread that was, I don't want to like embarrass this person. I think they may have even deleted their account. But it was just someone who had gotten a black person who'd gotten a full back piece tattoo that was... Let's see. There's like a.
Would you like for me to describe it to the listeners at home?
Go for it.
All right. So, it's a black person. I think they're a woman. I won't say, but I
would say they have since deleted their account. So, and it's not specifically to shame this specific person. But it is a wild thing to get tattooed.
The tattoo is of like a Japanese castle, surrounded on both sides by koi fish. With a katana down the middle, and then you see like sort of like sort of traditional like woodblock, the great wave type waves. But in the center of that is the rising sun, also known as the imperial flag of Japan in the center, and it's very prominently displayed. And obviously, this person does not know the connotations associated with that. But basically, the person posted this, and they were retweeted and. This user said, "This is why being informed on other cultures is very important because this is the Japanese version of the Confederate flag that they were waving about in World War II." Which I think is like the nicest, probably the nicest repost that this person got.
It seems like they got really harassed, and it also seems like they maybe did not do the best job of responding to criticism. I don't really know. It doesn't matter that much. But this actually reminds me of another thing that you're also my preeminent expert in, which is Godzilla, and specifically Godzilla Minus One, where I did have a moment where I was like, man, I love this movie. And then there's a moment that took me a little bit out of it where they're like, they get like an experimental plane from World War II, and like all the parts are like German labeled. And I was like, yeah, these guys are Nazis. And I know that it's not exactly the same thing, but we are 1,000% all rooting for this Nazi scientist to succeed right now.
Yeah.
You know, or Nazi allied Imperial Japanese Navy scientist.
Yeah.
We're like, and look, I know it's like just, it's like a different complex thing. And I mean, obviously we're also seeing the other side of wrestling with guilt over World War II in former Axis powers now. Complicated, bad mostly.
Also, it's like one of the themes of the movie too is, you know, just follow a
redemption.
It would be Kamikaze probably that was like, I don't think we should be doing this.
Yes. But I think it's like a thing where like, the maybe this is also just like a these kids today thing, because I do think people generally are more aware, or I should say Americans are more generally aware of the history of the Imperial flag, Imperial battle flag.
I mean, I will say myself, like I had no clue until I was in fully an adult, like in my early to mid 20s and in grad school. And I only know that because I had I went to grad school with a large Chinese student body, and one of my friends is like, yeah, my grandpa was killed by Japanese soldiers in World War II, and gave us a rundown for like what that what it meant, because like I had no idea, because like, you know, I think as I was saying before we started recording, is that I think though I would say a majority of Western people's perspective, my Western, I'm going to say explicitly like United States perspective, is like World War II was us versus Nazi Germany and Japan, and maybe if you've done a little bit more research, maybe you'll see Italy thrown in there, but usually it's just those two.
Right.
And I think a lot of, I would say my fellow Americans only think that we fought Japan because they bombed us, which they did, but like they don't know about any of their activities in I don't think they know anything about the rape of Nanking or like any of the like sort of liquidations of like Koreans and any of that stuff. So like I could see how, I very easily see how this person just associates, pretty color, pretty iconography on this thing, and not know what it actually means to a large portion of the world.
Well, because that flag also, like, it is of the various incarnations of the Japanese flag, the more dynamic one.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it's in Street Fighter. Like, it's in Street Fighter 2. Like, yeah, but like, you see, like in like E Honda's stage, like you know.
Well, that's the other side of things. It is like pervasive in media. It's interesting you mentioned Street Fighter, because Street Fighter was made by a Japanese company.
Yeah, Capcom.
So that is a little more. I think my main example of this as being a completely sanitized thing in American culture is in Karate Kid.
Oh yeah.
Where he wears the headband with that flag on it, given to him by a Japanese American, which is kind of fucked up on so many levels.
Yeah. Again, that plays into like most Americans not knowing the connotation of it until like recent generations. Because I mean, there's a whole other episode, but it's like talking about like access to information and like even like having the like critical thinking skills to like wonder why, and like there's just like a lot of stuff that I imagine most people were not doing in this country. They weren't directly involved or like were around environments where they're like, hey, maybe you should question these type of things. So like, I don't think the person that posted this posted, obviously they didn't post it because they knew the connotations of the image, but you know, yeah, you if you want to put something on your body permanently, you probably want to look it up. Also, listeners at home don't know that I also have a Japanese inspired tattoo, like more traditionally. The only relation is that it has traditional Japanese like woodblock type stuff. But like, even with that, like I knew when I got my tattoo, part of my tattoo, and I went to Japan, I knew that I would not be allowed in a lot of places because they do not like tattoos, but they specifically do not like these type of tattoos. So like, You know, when I went to who does Mario Land? Is that Universal?
Yes, I believe so. Yeah.
I went to Universal Japan and we were leaving, I went to get breakfast at the hotel that morning. They set me in the furthest corner, like literally in the corner, like like so far away from anyone else in that restaurant, to the point where like I thought it was kind of funny, but I was like, that was only because I was wearing a tank top and they saw my tattoos and they're like, hey, let's not get this guy around these other customers. But like, right. I think it's just one of the things, like, you should probably do the research, particularly if you're putting on images from cultures that maybe you did not grow up in.
Yeah, it's tough because it's like, there's like sort of like, I mean, this is where a little bit where the weeb of it comes in, which is like, there is like a relationship to a part of Japanese culture that exists, but it's not all of it.
You gotta get fully formed. I think you really want to, you just want to go to the Wikipedia page for the country that you're really interested in, like in their art or culture. I think that's the least you amount to do is like click on their country and then click on the little controversy tab and go to that and see what pops up.
The same way, like with anyone you're supporting, just the controversies tab is your absolute friend.
It'll save you a lot from getting dragged online. Like, and also, for those who don't know, I don't have Twitter anymore. So like, I say that upon my high horse, but I don't know who's getting dragged these days, but I imagine if someone deletes their account, I imagine this thing probably made the rounds for a couple of days, if I had to guess.
Yeah, it seemed like it. It might just be private. I don't know how Twitter works anymore. Here's a secondary question, just because we were talking about it just now, like using online spaces to organize. You're still a TikTok person, right?
Well, TikTok in the sense that I have TikToks and look at it, but like I very rarely very rarely post anything. Like the only TikTok I posted this year was a tribute to the late Akira Toriyama, speaking, I guess, of Japanese culture, the creator of Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z and all that stuff. But like, I posted a tribute to him, but like that was it. And that's only because I truly would not be working at all if it was not for his work. So like that's the only thing that I post on TikTok. I'm a complete 1000% lurker. Like, I just look at dumb anime and video game bullshit on there, but I very rarely actually engage.
Do you know what's funny though is I don't even know if that's true. It's just, it would just be like a Watchmen universe where you would just be whatever this universe's version of weeb for something else. If Dragon Ball had never existed, another thing, you would just be like, pirates dog or whatever.
Yeah, I'm really into G.I. Joe.
And this kind of conversation, too, is, like, so hard to, like, have. Not because it's, like, complicated, but it's, like, so hard to know what people know. Because I think, again, this, like, this Japanese imperial flag thing, it's, like, you kind of either know it or you don't.
And, again, I'm going to say, like, most Americans don't go know that. Also, like, I don't know. Again, this is just me projecting these things on this one, but like, I don't know, like, I can't imagine too many like black people like are getting this type of information. I don't know. I think that definitely has to do with like access and a whole bunch of stuff that are not directly related to that. But
yeah, I mean, I think it's Asian history that doesn't get taught. Yeah, because you're right. Like, World War II is basically like we fought Nazis plus friends plus their little friends.
Yeah,
and like, and you kind of forget the little friends were also doing their own Nazi stuff.
Pretty heinous stuff. Yeah.
So I think, but it's like understandable, but like unfortunate. And I guess, but the other side of it too, is like when you have this, like, as we're talking about this online or on a podcast, it's like, you also see this whole generation of like the kids being like correctly educated and radicalized in a good way on TikTok.
Yeah.
Which I'm like happy for, but it's so hard now because I'm like, everything we're saying, I'm sure there's like listeners who are like, oh, that's interesting, I didn't know that. And a big number of listeners who are like, yeah, that's fucking basic shit, you dummy.
I mean, that's how it's supposed to go, right? Like the younger generation is always supposed to like be supposedly supposed to be better than the previous generation. So like, I think that's just one of those pills you got to like choke down and be like, yeah, I'm glad that people that are younger than me know this stuff, like, and then have to wait till they're 22 to like figure it out because they just happen to make Chinese friends.
Yeah. You know. Let's take a wee break, I suppose, and come back and do a voicemail. I don't even know.
Let's do it, baby.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. Tattoo talk and weeb talk. That's the Cody Ziegler promise.
That's what you get. That's the Cody Ziegler special, baby, when I'm out. That's the twofer you get.
That's exactly what you're here for. All right. Let's once again, let me see if this fucking voicemail thing works. Oh, in honor of your trip to Toronto or to Canada, we'll do a slightly Canadian one. Here we go.
All right.
Hi, Tony, Andrew, and Kevin. I am a white woman from Canada, which means growing up I was surrounded by hockey, and hockey has always been sort of a whitewashed sport. And yeah, there's like cool organizations that work to sort of level the playing field for both women and minorities in hockey, including one where I'm from that is Black Run, and specifically focuses on helping Black girls get into the sport, which is very cool. But I was at a hockey game the other day, and a cell phone company made a very public donation to this organization, which in and of itself is very cool. But then they made a bunch of little girls from the organization like come out and accept the check and like stand on camera and smile. And that made me feel very uncomfortable. But I couldn't figure out if it was just the capitalism of it all that was giving me the ick, or if it was racism. So yeah, I'd love to get your take on it. But yeah, something about seeing them just standing on camera, having to be thankful for an opportunity that really should have been afforded them in the first place, made me feel gross. So yeah, love the show. Thank you.
Yeah, I feel that. I think that is just being cursed with knowledge, in that like you're conscious and you realize that you are living in a capitalist society where all these things are hand in hand, and like they're doing a good thing, but also on an auspice of like, now we got to bring out the people that we've
helped,
so like people can see the good deed we're doing. It's like, yeah, I think that's a totally normal reaction that you should have, and I know that I have that reaction. I can almost guarantee you that Andrew and Tawny have the same reactions when various things happen to them and those circles too, you know.
I think that like economics of it make this weird thing where it's like, because I feel like I never had this kind of one in college. One of my roommates had a scholarship wherein he had to like write like regular letters to like the person who funded the scholarship and like appear at like events basically to kind of just like as like a prop.
Yeah, you gotta sell your soul a little bit.
Yeah, or like, I mean, I guess what it is you're like, you know, it sort of gets back to the idea that kind of nothing is free, and even if this organization is doing the quote unquote right thing, they're doing it for a PR like they're paying for PR, and you are accepting that, and it shouldn't have to exist, but it's better that it exists than if it doesn't exist. But it feels gross.
Yeah, I think it's one of those unfortunately that's part of the game. And I think being conscious of it doesn't hurt to know that, though this is not an example of that, but it reminds me of like the, you know, the no ethical consumption under capitalism. Like this is not that, but it's for something that's adjacent to that for some reason in my mind. It's always like, yeah, this is what it's like participating in these societies. And being conscious of like these things and being critical of these things where, yeah, you're doing a good thing, which is like putting Black people, particularly like young Black girls, into a place where they're probably not. But unfortunately, the sort of monkey paw deal is that because of that, you have to now be a prop in their public relations. And, you know, it would be great to be in a society where you don't have to do that.
It's a little bit like, and this is something that I read a tiny bit about and should have read way more, but when I started working with a place we've both been, and I think we're going to try to get there this weekend, Solidarity and Snacks, but the idea of the difference between mutual aid and charity, which is like charity comes with these, and not to say that mutual aid doesn't necessarily, but it's ideally strives to have less of it and to recognize that we are just better as a society when everyone has everything. But yeah, this idea that this isn't, we're not doing this out of largesse, out of like the Duke hands, like, you know, gives alms to the poor or whatever. It's because we're better. All of us are better when there is like when resources are better distributed, evenly distributed, ideally.
Now, I was going to say, also, maybe even a less cynical version of that is like, yeah, maybe they're also, they have people that are giving them money to like filter through these donations. So like, maybe this is like them showing whoever's their donors are that, hey, this is what we're doing. Check out what we're doing. So like, see how these people are enjoying these things. So
yeah, of course it is like this, the thing, it's just like, it is, it also, the B side is, it feels churlish to criticize people who are like, you know, they are putting, they're opening their checkbooks. They're giving more money than I'm sure I'm ever given to, like, you know, so I'm like, I get it. Like, they are on some level better than me, but on some level not. And it's like complicated to think through that. But I think it is like, ideally, if there's a, like a piece of like understanding with that, it's like that there's, I think it is like the difference between mutual aid and charity is like the thing that it would feel better if this was like, you know, whatever the bank was. It's like realizing like society's better when diverse people, even on this level, are participating in sports. Like, it's just better. You know, I know that no corporation's actually doing it for that reason, but they should. I'm doing this. This is all working. This is all working.
I like
fine.
Seeing producer Andrew in the chair. Like, it's very fun. Like, I fuck, man. I like seeing you navigate.
Another voicemail. Perfect. Perfect job, Andrew.
Hi, Andrew. I just left a message. I'm not happy with it because I was really nervous. So if you could use this one instead, I'd be really grateful. Hi, Andrew, Tawny, Kevin, Peanut, if you're there, and any guests, if you're there. I'm not sure if this is a question or a snitch, so I will leave that up to you. Sorry, my aunt has a foreign exchange student living with her from Eastern Europe. He is really into chemistry, and he wants to do nuclear engineering. And he received a gift from someone in our family. It was a T-shirt that says Half Lives Matter on it, and it looks like the BLM logo. I'm pretty sure this is racist. I mean, I see the joke, Half Lives chemistry joke.
Boo.
But like, I just worry that this kid's gonna walk down the street in Oakland with his T-shirt on, and it's gonna be a problem, which is why I think it's racist. And I feel like Half Lives Matter is one step away from 3/5 Lives Matter. That's it.
I forgot about
Looking
that.
Looking forward to hearing
angle.
What you think.
Oh, yeah.
Bye-bye.
I forgot about an additional angle to this very bad shirt.
Yeah. There are multiple things going in my mind. One, like, there's the reality where the person that got this poor Eastern European person a shirt is just some old corny physicist or chemist who doesn't even understand how that would be taken bad.
Yeah.
Or it could be a version of someone who is knows that it's bad and is trying to pass it along. But then I'm thinking like this, I'm gonna be very optimistic and say this Eastern European student, foreign exchange student, has no context, has any idea what the fuck Black Lives Matter is. So I could see, I know you're being a cynical, but you can be my reflection. I'm going to say with that glass, the most fullest half glass, that this guy or this person maybe doesn't know what Black Lives Matters is. So like, they have no context for getting a shirt that says Half Life Matters. So you're like, oh yeah, I get it. This is a fun little pun, as fun as a scientific pun can be. So they have no idea what's going on. I think anyone who has any sensibility that understands the nuances of that or speaks from our language and culture would not let that dude wear that, or that person wear that shirt anywhere outside, unless they also think it's funny to mock the Black Lives Matters movement.
Yeah, but it was also a shirt that was produced. Like, this isn't just like one person.
It could be one of those things where also, like, I mean, we've all know these, like, they don't understand why it's annoying. They don't get why it's offensive, and maybe they don't want to be. They don't mean it in like an ironic, offensive way. They're just like, oh, this is funny because it's a thing that people know, and now if I take out this one word, now it's a thing. You know, it could be one of those things where it's not intentional. You know, it's just an intention, but it still has the impact.
Yeah. You know? It's like this shit where I think, look, this is the absolute bottom of the barrel of reference comedy.
Yeah. I mean, it's Facebook. This is like the thing that your white uncle or aunt will post. Yeah. Like, isn't this funny? Like, it's like old white person Facebook content.
Yeah.
Old white relative Facebook content is what I would call
it. It's like RIP to white Uncle Michael. Because.
Yeah. I won't say that.
No, you can't.
You can cut this, Kevin, but rest in piss.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fine. Keep it in. Yeah, the fucking, I mean, like, I think the thing is with this kind of comedy is that these people just think any reference to it, essentially, it's, I guess the version is, it speaks to the brandification of Black Lives Matter, which is one of the ways that like things are sanitized. Like it's like turned into, you know, a logo or a slogan. And it is a little shocking to me that the meaning behind the slogan can be so like fucking like ripped from it in this way. Cause I'm like, it's not subtle what is meant by Black Lives Matter, even if it's sort of like turned into a political, like, you know, the same way that woke or whatever is being used. It's like, yeah, okay, okay. It does. It means different things to different people. And the original meaning is gone, not gone, but not necessarily exactly what's being talked about. But
yeah,
you know, this is like, you know, when they make just like the O'Douls logo, but it says O'Dweeds or something. It's just like, this is
it is like Big Johnson Spencer.
Yeah.
It's giving, like, just it's giving Spencer gifts.
Applying that level of bullshit to something that is like this serious, I guess just speaks to how, you know, they're trying to like kill the message of Black Lives Matter by co-opting it. But
yeah,
it's on so many levels so fucking disgusting. And of course it's just corny. I take umbrage at your science shirts are just corny thing. Well, no, I don't take umbrage. I agree with you. But I will say in college I don't think it even got made, but I pitched this for like a psychology conference, a shirt that said, "My prosap agnostics know me by my swagger." Because prosap agnosia is the condition that's commonly known as face blindness. And one mechanism that prosap agnostics tend to use for identifying people is recognizing their gait. So, you know.
I mean, look, I will say that's a good joke, but that, I mean, as someone who literally works with math PhDs and science nerds Monday through Friday, who we just spent a significant portion of a week doing a very math intense episode, like, I think for men of a certain age, which will probably be over 60, like, they will find a joke being like they will find a shirt like "out with the old and with the nucleus" to be hysterical, because you're really dealing with like traditional, like, I'm talking about OG, like, what do you think of, like, a geek or nerd, like you're Revenge of the Nerd type nerds, like, they will find that thing, you know, kind of endearing in a way that maybe us younger people will not find as endearing. So in the same way that your swagger joke is something that a new age,
so good. It's just so good that you're probably I bet you're a little, you're probably just thrown back.
So I think the takeaway is get better writer. I think that's get a better writing staff for these shirts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not all white, ideally.
Yeah.
That's, so we're going to have to find that. All right. This we did. We answered some voicemails.
Yeah. We entered a text, apparently, which is new.
Yeah. Yeah. In general, that's right. We should say, feel free to call or write in or text in 323-389-7223, 323-389-RACE, and get your questions in. We're taking regular advice. We have actually a good one queued up for next time, but I wanted to do this tattoo business. So we're moving into the general advice game, because it's like so much of our racism advice boils down to, like, have you considered acting right? So I feel like we're somewhat qualified to
well, that, and also that you space. Were just so close to solving racism that I think you guys,
yeah, so we gotta branch out. So
yeah,
Zig, do you even want people to find you? How do people find you?
No, I hate, I mean, I deleted my Twitter, I hate social media, but if you need to find me, I mean, absolutely need to find me. Yay for Zig on Instagram. I only post things comic book related because I need you to go out and buy those things, and every now and then I'll slip in an actual earnest post about myself, but usually it's just like stuff that I'm doing, a TV show, a movie, a comic book, graphic novel. Check those things out.
Find Zig's work at the comic book store.
Yeah.
Or what are you writing these days? Yeah.
I am writing Miles Morales Spider-Man. I don't know when this episode comes out, but his 300th issue will be out the 27th of March, so check that out. Also, okay. Deadpool comes out in April. Spider-Punk is, you know, number two is out. You know, there's a book I'm probably writing it. I got an Aliens short story coming out.
Yeah.
Check that out.
I'm
a huge Aliens fan. Did you read those Alien comics back in the day, Andrew? I can't remember if we
talked about that. Oh, yeah. Of course.
Yeah. I love that shit. So I got like a. I had to do like a thing for that.
None of those are. I guess some of them basically form the basis for the Alien versus Predator movies, and then the rest
of it. Yeah, 1,000%.
We're not using any of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Check those out or check out Futurama on Hulu, baby.
Yeah, absolutely. Zig, thanks for being here. Of course. I don't know what. Suboptimalpods.com. And when you said you weren't sure when this episode was coming out, I join you in that because I'm not exactly clear where this is in the schedule. So thanks for being on. We'll almost certainly be out in time to promo the comic.
Beautiful.
So yeah, that's it. Peace. This is Suboptimal.